This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Many Americans prefer to keep their summer reading light, both in subject and weight. They stick to paperback romances or thrillers that go down as easily as a tall glass of lemonade on a hot summer day. Still, other readers choose biographies as their beach and backyard books. The subjects of biographies can range from forgotten writers to famous singers to historical figures. You often learn something from a good biography, but the best biographies are also good stories. A compelling writer can even transform the life of a racehorse into a bestseller. Witness the success of Laura Hillenbrand's Seabiscuit. Today, as part of our summer reading series, we'll be talking about biographies, which are bought, which are read, and which end up as doorstops. And later in the hour, we'll speak to the biographer of screen legend Katharine Hepburn, who died this past weekend. We also want to hear from you. What makes someone's life story worth telling and, more importantly, worth reading? Which biographies have made it onto your summer reading list? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. With us to talk about biographies is Adam Langer. He's a senior editor of Book Magazine, and he joins us now from NPR's New York Bureau. Thanks for being with us, Adam.
Thanks for having me on.
What would you say are the characteristics of a really good biography?
Well, I think when you're looking at a good biography, you're looking at the same kind of components that make up any other great literary form, a great novel, any sort of great work of literature. So you're looking for something that has a compelling character in it, something that has elements of suspense, something that has all the elements that you would put into the great American novel.
So you're looking for great writing.
You are looking for great writing, and you're looking for a great story to a great extent.
Yeah. As an editor, how do you know when a writer comes to you with an idea for a biography that it's a good idea? I mean, do they have to have a certain angle on a familiar figure, or is it somebody you've never heard of before or thought of before as a biography? Or
I think one of the most interesting things that a biography can do is, yes, it tells you about a person's life story. That is the definition of a biography. But at the same time, for a biography to be a really strong piece of work, it has to be more than about a person. And in some of the great biographies, we not only see portraits of people, we see portraits of generations, we see portraits of cultures. For example, one of the things I think a great biography can do is to open up a world to you that you never thought you were interested in before. And by the same token, a biography that isn't so successful can take a person you thought you were interested in and render them inert so that you never want to hear anything about this person again in your life.
You know, I confess, first of all, that I'm mostly a fiction reader. I love fiction. But what I get bogged down sometimes when I'm reading biography is that I can get bogged down sometimes in the detail, that biographers will put just too much detail. And I think, well, I do want to know about this person, but not quite this much information.
I have to confess to a similar bias on my part. I'm a fiction writer by trade, and I read a great deal of fiction. But at the same time, what I bring to it is that I'm looking for, in a biography, the same sorts of things that I am looking for in fiction. If I can bring up one book that's coming out shortly, there's a new book coming out called Wings of Madness, and it's a book by Paul Hoffman. Paul Hoffman is not necessarily a biographer by trade. He wrote one other biography. But this is a biography of a person I had never heard of before in my life. His name is Alberto Santos Dumont, who is a Brazilian aviator, one of the fathers of modern aviation. This isn't a topic that I was particularly interested in, but by the end, I knew a lot about aviation. I knew a lot about this tragic figure, a crazed tragic figure who was like something out of a Monty Python or Terry Gilliam film, a man who had his own personal airship in the early part of the 20th century, who hung out with Jules Verne and H.G. Wells. And it's not a doorstop of a biography, as you were mentioning before. It's not one of these 900-page tomes that you give to Dad. He reads in his lazy boy the first 5 pages and puts it back on the shelf. It's a compelling story with elements of tragedy, elements of farce. And there are great elements of biography you can find without necessarily dwelling on some of the detail work that gets folks like you bogged down from time to time.
Well, what are the telltale signs of a bad biography?
Well, I mean, the telltale signs of a bad biography are the telltale signs of any bad book. There are books that are poorly written. There are a lot of books that have been sold solely on the basis of their subject. there will be a compelling American figure, a compelling historical figure, and someone will present a biography on this person, but have no particular access to it. They'll have a great deal of information from other biographies, but not have a particularly new angle on it. Oftentimes, we see a lot of biographies that dwell on scurrilous details, the good parts, as we used to call them when we were skimming through them in fifth and sixth grade. But the books aren't about a lot more than gossip.
I was going to say, sometimes biographies really are very gossipy kinds of things, and maybe not so well written even.
Obviously, I mean, the same problems that affect biographies affect every work of literature, and there are good biographies and bad biographies. There's good literature and bad literature. There's, frankly, good gossip in bad biographies, and there are good biographies that, unfortunately, to those of us with prurient interests, have little gossip at all. So, I mean, a biography is such a huge form, and there's so many different individuals that are figure in it therein that it's really difficult to pinpoint what are the one things that make a good or a bad biography. It's the same thing that affects all works of literature.
We are talking about biographies today on Talk of the Nation, and the number is 1-800-989-8255. And let's go to Rhett in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Rhett.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I like to read presidential biographies. It's a hobby. I read First in His Class by David Marnus, and one of the things I find so fascinating about today figures is that in reading First in His Class prior to the presidency, you saw how he dealt with a lot of shadowy circumstances in his past, such as his draft record, and I thought that it was very foreshadowing of how he was going to deal with, or how he wound up dealing with, the Lewinsky scandal. And I was wondering if the expert could comment on if there's any biographies on President Bush that might provide the same type of character insight, not always negative, but just character insight that gives a pattern on how he deals with events or circumstances.
There hasn't been a great deal written about Bush that has a very kind of comprehensive look. I mean, there's been Molly Ivins' look on him. There's that been the book Bush. There was the book Fortunate Son, which unfortunately I believe was pulled before its publication. One of the difficulties one has in approaching a biography is often the best ones are the ones written 25, 30, 40 years after a person has already died, in which case we can get a sense of their entire life's work and how it fits into history. It's often very difficult to find a well-written, strong biography of someone whose life is still in process, particularly a public figure.
Red, I was curious. You said that this is kind of a hobby of yours. Do you stick just to presidential biographies, or are you mostly interested in any kind of historical figure, a biography of any kind of historical figure?
I tend to stick with American history. I just read the biography on Ben Franklin, which I found very fascinating.
That would be the Edmund Morgan biography?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
I thought it was very well written, and I like the when you were commenting early that it's got to be a good story. I found the two volumes on Theodore Roosevelt, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, to be fantastic. I couldn't put it down. And T-Rex I found bogged down in the details, and I could barely get through it.
That's interesting.
Thanks for your call, Rhett.
Thank you.
It seems like he just mentioned the biography of Benjamin Franklin. Now, that's one of the big biographies that's out right now. And it seems like there's always one or two in the summer season that really hit with readers.
Yeah, it seems we have such a fascination with our country's origins. I mean, there's a new book also about John Paul Jones, which is getting quite good notices. Obviously, David McCullough with John Adams a couple years ago. One of the things I was thinking of on the walk over here is it's kind of interesting to look at what biographies we read at different points of our life. And it's almost you could write a biography of someone based on the biographies that they read, like whether you started out aspiring to be a sports figure and reading biographies of various athletes, and then where you move on to in your life. Why are you reading biographies of presidential figures? What does that tell you about yourself? Does it tell you that you still aspire to be this sort of figure? Do you think of yourself as this sort of figure? It's kind of interesting to look at what the biographies you read tell you about you.
And what about the process of researching a biography? What goes into it, and how much does that research, do you think, lead to it being a good book or not?
Well, I mean, you can have books that have almost, you can never have too much research, but I think there comes a time sometimes when you have so much information that you don't know what to do with it. I think that's the problem that afflicted Edmund Morris a few years back. We talked about his Roosevelt biographies, your caller just mentioned, but also you had the biography Dutch he did of Ronald Reagan, where he had so much and so much access and so many documents that he wound up coming with a very strange narrative device because he was stuck and had writer's block. I mean, every biography has different angles in it. Some person will be writing about someone they were acquainted with, someone they had a personal interest in, someone their agent told him it was time to come up with a biography and they were looking for someone who hadn't had a biography written about them lately. And for each of those, there are a ton of different ways that go into the researching of it. It also depends on whether you're dealing with someone who's living or dead, whether you have access to documents, whether you don't, whether you have access to living sources, whether you don't, whether you can do interviews or not. It's a whole wealth of different sorts of approaches.
What biographies are you reading? We're talking about biographies here on Talk of the Nation, and we'd like to know if you've got any favorites from your lifetime or just from this summer. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Kathleen in Hollywood, Florida, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
I did my research on early 20th century writers who hung out in salons, so I read more biographies than anyone. And I would agree with what he said about the best ones are written after the person is dead and also after their spouses are dead, because then you tend to get the more accurate information. But I also wanted to recommend the best one of all the ones I read was a biography of Dorothy Parker, and it's by a woman named Marion Mead, and the title is What Fresh Hell Is This?
And what makes it such a good biography?
Well, I'll tell you, I had read, before I found that one, I had read two others that were just horrible, and they, like, quoted her funny lines, and but they just glossed over everything. And Marion Mead, I think it came out maybe in the 80s, she did an excellent job of doing a lot of research. She got factual information. It's really well written, and Dorothy Parker deserved it. And, of course, she's such an interesting person to begin with, you know. But it's really quite good and was the basis, actually, of that film, Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle. Most of that was based on her book.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for the call, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Kathleen made an interesting brought up an interesting point in my mind, and that is that although Dorothy Parker is just a fascinating person in her own right, as she mentioned, she read three different biographies, but two of them weren't interesting. One was
right.
Great. So a lot really does a bad book, even though the person is fascinating, they can still be the subject of a bad book.
Well, she mentioned Dorothy Parker, and she also touched on something that's true of biographies. And two of the most difficult sorts of biographies to write, I think, are biographies of writers and biographies of comedians, and we're seeing a lot of those lately. And it's difficult because a writer's style will almost always pale in comparison to the writer they're writing about. And at the same time, when documenting a comedian, we're seeing biographies coming out about W.C. Fields, we're seeing one coming out about Lucille Ball, we're seeing another one coming out about, or just recently came out about Lenny Bruce. And invariably, the writer will have a flat-ish style in comparison to these quotes and these episodes and these routines that just kind of fly off the page. So it's kind of a dangerous business to get into. There are some quite good ones, but it's a tough line of work.
And I just want to read this email. I've just discovered two biographies written by Leona Rostenberg and Madeline Stern, RNS, who are passionate lifelong book collectors and antiquarian booksellers, wrote Old Books, Rare Friends, and Bookends. According to the book flap, these books are about two forthright women who knew the true meaning of lifelong friendship. That's from Hester Myers. Thanks so much for that recommendation. We're talking about books to read this summer, and we're focusing today on biographies. Is there one that you would like to suggest? We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK, or send us an email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met so the world would never.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We are talking about biographies today as part of our summer reading series. Our guest is Adam Langer. He's the senior editor of Book Magazine. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK or send us an email at totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Margaret Maupin. She's a book buyer for the Tattered Covered Bookstore in Denver, Colorado, and she's on the phone with us from her office there. Thanks for joining us, Margaret.
Thank you.
Now, Margaret, give us what are the three biographies that seem to be really popular with this with customers this summer? And let's exclude Hillary Clinton's Living History from that. Our autobiography.
Right. Well, the first that I would mention is An Unfinished Life, John Kennedy, 1917 to 1963. And while I always think there can't be one more thing written about President Kennedy, there always seems to be more revelations about his private life and just something more fleshing out the man that has become sort of an icon. So that's been a popular one. The other one that's still selling is John Adams by David McCullough. And it's, of course, now in paperback. And I believe this is the third year of John Adams, maybe the second year, but it's still as popular as ever. People are so interested in that book. And, of course, David McCullough is a fabulous biographer, and he brings history to life. And I think what I like about his books is he is so interested in his subject, and he likes his subject, which is not always true of every biographer. So then people are going back reading Truman if they've not read it, or Mornings on Horseback, which is about Teddy Roosevelt.
And what about some of the lesser-known biographies on your shelf? Which ones are you recommending that may not be getting as much press as some of these others?
Well, I'll tell you. There is one called The Sisters, and it's about the Mitford sisters.
Oh, yeah.
And they're fascinating because Nancy, the eldest, was a biographer and quite a fine writer. Then there was Diana, who married Oswald Mosley, who was a fascist leader in Great Britain right before the war. And then Jessica, who was a communist. And Unity, who was in love with Hitler, and Pamela, who was kind of the quiet one, and then Deborah, who is at present the Duchess of Devonshire, and is out with a new book of her own called Counting My Chickens, which is a delightful sort of little memoir vignettes from her life.
Now, that's been out for a while, hasn't it?
Well, it's been out for about a year.
Okay. Do you notice that there are certain kinds of readers who are attracted to biographies over other genres? And how would you characterize that type of a reader?
Well, you know, I think people tend to want to read about interesting people. The one thing that I've noticed, I have a friend who is going back and reading presidential biographies, starting with Washington. And I think the feeling is that many people did not learn enough in high school history, American history, and so now they're in their 30s and 40s or older, and they enjoy going back and educating themselves about the history of our country. So I think there's that aspect. And then I think a lot of people find that fiction has become trivial in a way, and they want to read about something of substance and people of substance.
Okay, thanks so much, Margaret Maupin.
Thank you.
Margaret Maupin is a book buyer for the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. She joined us by phone from her office there. Adam Langer is the senior editor of Book Magazine, and he's still with us. Adam, just briefly, can you give us some of your recommendations for good summer reading this summer of biographies?
I'll just throw a few out real quick. I mentioned before Wings of Madness, the biography of Alberto Santos Dumont by Paul Hoffman, which I think is a great book. A literary biography, which I think is pretty interesting, is Beautiful Shadow. It's a biography of Patricia Highsmith, the author of the famous Ripley series, who led a fairly grim life herself. Just kind of as a curveball, there's a young adult biography out called Dvorak in America by the preeminent American music critic Joe Horowitz, who decided to write a young adult biography about Dvorak's time in America, which I think is a really nice introduction to classical music for young folks. One other thing that I kind of really like that I haven't seen anybody buy was a biography called Christo and Jean-Claude about the artist couple who was famous mostly for the wrapped Reichstag. And Bert Chernow was the biographer who actually passed away shortly before completing it, but it's a really fascinating portrait of artists at work. Those are a few that come to mind. Also, other books that I really quite enjoyed, the new Isaac Newton biography by James Gleick, who's a fascinating writer, Wrapped in Rainbows, which is a biography of Zora Neale Hurston, which is another fascinating story of American life. Those are some of the ones that I have read recently that I think are really, really strong works.
We're talking about biographies here on Talk of the Nation as part of our summer reading series, and let's go to Alan in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Alan.
Good afternoon to you both. Couple of books I'd like to mention that I've read in the past year or so that were really interesting because they gave such a great sense of place and time through the lives of very interesting people. One is the recently published biography of Sandy Koufax, which is a extremely enjoyable read and paints a wonderful picture of an individual who heretofore largely known as either a man of mystery or simply just a great left-handed pitcher, gives a wonderful full view of his life and times. The other is the story of four people, Joan Baez and her sister Mimi, Richard Farina, and Bob Dylan. Positively Fourth Street paints a great picture for those of us that are approaching or have passed 50 years old and loved folk music when it first came out and have followed individuals' music careers. Gives a wonderful portrait of these four people, how their lives intertwined, and especially in light of what has happened to their careers since then.
All right. Thanks so much for your recommendations, Alan.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Mark Zwanitzer. He is the lead author of Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone? The Carter Family and Their Legacy in American Music, and he's on the phone with us from his home in Weston, Connecticut. Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Hi, Lynn. Nice to be here.
Before we get into our conversation, we wanted to hear a bit of music from the Carter Family song that lends the book its title, and here it is.
Will you miss me?
That's the Carter Family singing Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone, and it's also the title of a new book. Mark Zwanitzer is the lead author of that book. Mark, were you a big fan of the Carter Family before you started writing the book?
Well, I was certainly a fan, but I would say that I came to appreciate the music a lot more as I learned more and more about their lives and about these people.
Are you a fan of country music in general, or what sort of motivated you to look into the Carter Family?
Well, I like big, kind of interesting American lives and Americans who have traveled a great distance, you know. And the Carter Family, I think they're more than just a great music family. They're a great American family because they did travel this great distance in their lives, and they dealt with a lot, and they saw a lot of America. And so for that reason, I really became fascinated in the story of the family itself.
Were you able to get access to members of the Carter family who are still alive?
Oh, absolutely. The sons and daughters of, the son and daughters of A.P. and Sarah and of Maybelle and her husband Eck were all alive when we started on this, and they were more than generous with their help for a number of years.
I would imagine that when you're doing a family story like this, you hear a lot of different versions, perhaps, of the same story. How would you, as a biographer, go about verifying facts and being sure that you were telling the most accurate version of the story possible, let's say?
Yeah, every family has a different take on the same story, and you start to find overlap in the story. And there are also, you know, ways to check things, simple, you know, land records and court documents and all that kind of thing can be checked. And checking stories with other people who might be 1,200 miles away and not in the same room is always useful.
Now, there's a lot of personal information on the Carter family. First of all, it's very sensitive delving into that area. Did you have any personal sort of inhibitions or concerns about delving into people's personal lives that way?
Well, yeah, I had a good bit of inhibition, and I actually put my toe in the water pretty gently. It's not something I do or want to do, but, you know, the breakup of the Carter family was an essential part of the story, and I had to explain why that happened, and so I had to deal with that. And I guess, you know, the toughest personal parts of the story, I just wanted to approach it with a little bit of sympathy for the people involved.
How is the family, and how are Carter family fans reacting so far to those aspects of the story?
Well, you know, they're still having me to dinner in Poor Valley, Virginia, and I still count them as great friends.
So you haven't alienated anybody?
Well,
yet.
Not so they've told me.
Okay. But that's a danger, isn't it, when you're writing a biography, in this case of a family, but when you're writing this kind of story about people who are still alive and about very sensitive family matters?
Well, yeah, and you have to sort of put yourself behind the eyes of the family, and you have to think about, you know, how you're in a family in some way. You almost become like a member of the family, and but at the same time, at some point, you have to let that go, and you owe more to the reader than you do to the family.
Now, you have written this book, but you are also a documentary filmmaker and have made biographical documentaries about people like Jesse Jackson, Joe DiMaggio. How is that different from writing a biography?
Well, it was a great pleasure to be able to write a biography in this sense. In television and film documentary, you just sort of have to get on the track and tell one straight linear story. And with this book, I could stop and make long, you know, loops out to the side and do little bits about Dr. John Brinkley, who was a fascinating character, and side characters like Hank Williams and Elvis Presley, who bounced into the story, and you can take time with those people that you might not be able to in television or film.
Was there anything surprising about this experience, something you didn't expect based on your previous experience as a filmmaker?
I was surprised how much fun it was. You know, I mean, it was a lot of my writer friends said, "Yeah, you know, it's awful writing, what a horrible thing, you know, blood on the page." But I have to say, it was a lot of fun for me. It was like sitting down in an easy chair and just telling a story to a friend.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Sure.
Mark Zwanitzer is the lead author of Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone? The Carter Family and Their Legacy in American Music. He joined us by phone from his home in Weston, Connecticut. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the number here is 1-800-989-8255. And we'd like to take a call now from Angela in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Angela.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yes, my question is this, and it's also in reference to the comment that was made earlier by the one lady that people in their 30s and 40s are now gravitating more towards biographies because they do want to learn more about American history. How do you decipher the best biographies of people that are now long gone, say Benjamin Franklin, for example? You know, the sources are no longer, you know, available to contact and gain knowledge from. How do you decipher the best historical figures in our history that is, for as far as biographies go, to pick and read?
Adam Langer?
Well, I think she brings up an interesting point, but it's not necessarily a question of which facts a biographer uses. I mean, everyone can have the same access to Benjamin Franklin. They're all in the public domain, I would assume, by now. But it's a question of what's done with that fact, what those facts, how artfully they're brought together, what sort of story is the person trying to tell. It's a lot of people can have a lot of footnotes, and a lot of people could have a lot of bibliographic sources, but it's what's done with them. And, I mean, anyone could have taken the details of Holden Caulfield's life had he existed and written a story about Holden Caulfield, but only one person probably could have written Catcher in the Rye. And I think it's the same sort of principle applies. It's how you treat the facts that are out there.
Okay, thanks for your call, Angela.
Thank you.
And Dana in, I think it's Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's great to be on. I wanted to call and say that good writing can save even the worst character. I, too, read that biography of Dorothy Parker by Marion Mead. By the end of the book, I hated Dorothy Parker, but I loved the writing. So I went looking for other books by that author, and I found one. It's called Eleanor of Aquitaine by Marion Mead. It is a simply phenomenal biography. It's a, what I call a You Are There book. You're on crusade with Eleanor. You're with her when she leaves Louis for Henry. You're with her when Henry locks her up for 20 years. You're with her when she rules England essentially alone when Richard is out of the country for most of the time. It's a marvelous, marvelous book with just fabulous writing.
Dana, am I safe in assuming that you are a biography reader?
Oh, well, not exclusively. I sort of read everything.
Uh-huh.
The writing has to be really good before I can get into a biography. I don't really target them. I have a couple of other recommendations for
people. Okay, quickly.
Jane Austen by Claire Tomlin, another wonderful biography, and Washington, the Indispensable Man by James Thomas Flexner. They both, it's not just a biography of the person, but of the time. You're there in the time and the place as well.
I think that's something, Adam, you mentioned earlier, that a good biography can open up a world to you, a world you don't know, a world you maybe never even thought you were interested in. And that
Absolutely right. And also, a mediocre biography can close that door firmly shut.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Dana.
Thank you.
Just want to read this one last email here, and maybe you can comment on this for us, Adam. This is from Stephanie Brown. Pet peeve, losing track of subject's age or date of current activity while reading. Best answer, biography of Winston Churchill with date on top of one page in header and his age on the other page header. It was a wonderful addition. How can we encourage other publishers to do this?
Well, it's an amusing thought, but I hope a skillful enough biographer wouldn't let you lose track of the moment any more than a skillful mystery writer would let you lose track of what suspect was being questioned at any particular time. I'm not sure if we need to label every page with years, though apparently it was useful in this case.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us today, Adam.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about what books to read this summer, and I'd like to thank Adam Langer. He is the senior editor of Book Magazine. He joined us from our New York bureau. Up next, we remember the elegant, auburn-headed charisma of Kate Hepburn. What film of hers did you find the most memorable? Give us a call. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.